Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
All right, well, good evening. We are here in downtown Redding, California. This is Kevin Cry. Want to say hello to Kylie, who is actually on her way to San Diego, driving for her senior year at Grand Canyon University. This past week, I found myself in Tampa Bay, was watching a good friend and client of mine, Jonathan Horton, get inducted into the U.S. Gymnastics Hall of Fame. And it was awesome to watch him get inducted, wrapping up his career, the final feather in his cap, so to speak. And then another one of my athletes, Brody Malone, defended his U.S. national senior title, which is not the NCAA's, which he did win last year. But this year, he's now a two-time defending all-around champion of U.S. gymnastics. And what was neat was watching two people at different ends of their career, both that I have intimate knowledge of. And it was neat to see two people who are very diverse in age and experiences and accomplishments, and just both great guys. And I love being around great guys. And I've got two great guys here in the studio with me today. Chris Kellstrom, candidate for District 5 Supervisor of Shasta County and the current mayor of Anderson. I'm a Cub, class of 94, go Cubs, and the current mayor, Baron Browning. And I am stoked because a lot of you, as you know, we were going to have them on a couple weeks ago, and it didn't work out. And but we're ecstatic and excited to have you guys both in the studio. So, Chris and Baron, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So I want to jump in. What we're going to do, just to kind of lay out what's happening, we're going to take our only break at the 30-minute mark, and we're going to go through some questions these first 30 minutes. And then the last 30 minutes, we'll take in callers. So when you call in at the 30-minute mark after the commercial break, you'll be asked your question. You're going to give your question, then we're going to hang up because there's a lot of people we want to get through, a lot of messages I've received, and these are the top questions. But before we jump into those, Chris, can you tell us, just for the listeners that are new, to a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Born and raised right here in Shasta County. Managed a store in Anderson at the ripe old age of 19. Moved to Cottonwood shortly thereafter.
Just 4 years ago?
No, a little longer than that. Met the ex, moved down for her schooling to Sacramento County, which was a horrible experience. Actually, it wasn't bad. We found a little ton of gold, made a lot of friends there, and it was okay, but this was always home. So finally got back home again in 2001. Managed a store out in Happy Valley at that time. I was at that store when the planes hit the towers, and remember afterwards, you know, everybody's in shock, and then went over to the feed store and watched it on news there with Jimmy Ray. I've managed business forever, been in customer service and sales for quite a while now. So I just decided about 8 years ago, the current supervisor kind of got me a little angry, and I was like, you know what, if I can't replace him, I think maybe I'll just jump in there myself. 4 years ago, Melissa Hunt ran, a friend of mine, and I thought, hey, I'll wish her the best, and it didn't quite pan out. So this time around, I thought, well, I'm just going to do it myself. So I actually talked to Baron before I pulled the trigger, and so he said, hey, there's nothing says we both can't run. So here we are.
That's awesome. Thank you. So, Baron.
Yeah, so Baron Browning, District 5 is what I'm running for, just like Chris. Current mayor of Anderson, and born and raised in eastern Oregon in a small town called Dayville, Oregon, outside of John Day.
How far is that from Klamath, roughly?
Well, from John Day, it's about 30 minutes.
Okay.
From John Day.
Got it.
So great life, you know. Our population was 110. My graduating class was 6, you know. So, and my point of all that is I love the small town feel of, you know, being living in Anderson and living in the, you know, South Shasta County area,
yeah,
where we all get along and we can agree to disagree and get some great things done together. So that's the best part of it. I'm a business owner of a couple businesses in Anderson. And formerly before that, I worked for Budweiser and traveled a lot. And in 2004, while I was on the road, my wife said, hey, all my family's in Anderson. I'm moving home. So are you coming?
would love for you to join me.
Yeah. Hey, please tell me you're in the top 5 of your graduating class.
that's awesome.
Well, the six didn't graduate, so yes. I'm just kidding.
No, that is awesome. So, okay, so let's jump in.
Sure.
That's awesome. And there's something, not something, there's a lot special about a lot of the places in Shasta County, but Cottonwood, the Cottonwood Parade, Anderson, the history there. It's a great place to call home, and it's a great place to be from. And I owe a lot of who I am today, for sure, to the school system, Anderson Middle School, who now has Jason Province as a phenomenal superintendent.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, Victor leading the charge up there at the high school. It's a great place. And then, first question. So we are slowly stepping out of one of the worst pandemics our nation has faced. Are you happy with how the county handled this crisis? And what would you do differently? So by alphabetical order, let's go with Baron first.
Well, you know, I, in a lot of ways, I think as a nation, we obviously went in a direction that most of us don't agree with as far as the way it was handled. And I know from an Anderson standpoint, the way we voted was we were one of the first actually in the state of emergency, or not renew it, as they call it, if you will.
Yeah.
And we came back to having a council meeting before anybody else. And so I would agree that it was handled poorly, and that we probably needed to move a little quicker and figure out what was going on, and continue to have meetings, live meetings is my opinion.
That's great.
Yeah, I would definitely have the live meetings. You know, there were some sheriffs that stepped forward. I believe ours also did it, the same thing, that said, hey, we're not going to enforce this. I mean, we don't have time to arrest people for not wearing a mask or whatever. And I think I would have liked to seen some of our county health departments and stuff kind of go the same route with, okay, we're forced under these mandates. You know, this is the state of California is telling us we have to do this. So here, everybody needs to wear a mask. If you don't wear one, nobody's going to do anything. You know, it's your choice. The Cottonwood schools were very good about that. They never closed down, actually. And it was, you know, they had to post the statements, and people were still mad that they just posted the statements saying that, you know, we're under mask mandate or whatever. And then they finally were like, listen, we're not going to enforce them. No one's going to make your kid put a mask on if they don't want to put a mask on. You know, we have to post this. We have to say that we're under it. But we're not going to enforce it. So I would have liked to seen a little bit more of that, you know, less enforcement of it. Not that our county was really horrible. They didn't really crack down heavily, but at the same time, it's just now that the pandemic is whatever, somewhat over, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, it's kind of like now the CDC is coming out and like, oh, yeah, all you tinfoil hat wearing guys, the mask didn't work, and, the vaccine doesn't work, and, the efficacy rate of the vaccine is not what we said it was. And so they're kind of coming back and basically saying that, yeah, you guys are right. They're never going to say that, but that's, you know, we had a lot of questions from the get-go on that.
Yeah, no.
I could jump in for a second.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I just want to say that we told all of our businesses in Anderson, like, who am I as a business owner to tell you you have to close?
Yeah.
Right? We're not doing that. We're not, I agree totally with Chris. We're not enforcing this.
Yeah.
You're a business. You need to make your own decisions. You need to understand the consequences of those, and they're not ours.
Yeah.
Right? Those are OSHA. If they choose to come in, the city's not going to come in.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I've heard of any, at least in Anderson, where OSHA or anybody else came in, at least in the Anderson area.
That wasn't the case here in the city of Reading. That you know, I'm a business owner in the city of Reading, and that wasn't the case. And
we just decided not to do it.
Yeah.
Again, they're running a business, and who am I to tell them to shut down?
And what's essential?
And what's the income, right?
Yep.
I mean, now we're going to run them out of business, and so then they don't, you know, they're not paying taxes from their business, then they're going to lose their home. I mean, what is the devastation? What's the end of the devastation,
Absolutely.
In my opinion?
I agree. Okay, Chris, would you have accepted ARPA funds as a county supervisor? And if so, how do you like to see that money allocated?
So when I first heard this issue come up, it was a hard no, because there were so many strings attached. But then after looking into it more and more, basically you could tie it. If you can tie it to COVID in any way whatsoever, well, then you could accept these funds and use them for, you know, just about anything you wanted. So, you know, we probably could have got some water in the acid canal by saying, hey, the dry climate is worse on COVID, so we need to fill that canal. canal up and irrigate some of our fields to make our COVID situation better. I mean, you could tie it to just about anything. I mean, you can tie it to a new jail. You can tie it to all sorts of stuff. So after looking more into it, yeah, I probably would have accepted it. But when it was first brought an issue, there was quite a few red flags saying, hey, you're going to have to do exactly what they tell you to. You know, you're going to be under these mask mandates forever. They're going to force vaccinate everybody if you accept $1 of this money. But after looking into it a little bit more, yeah, I probably would have accepted it.
We did accept it in Anderson, yeah. Absolutely. And we used it exactly, we read it through the same way. And so what we actually did with it was we actually used it for some outdoor entertainment. So now we have internet down at the park. Mm-hmm. And so we used that so that people could be out and about, they could come around, you know. Not everybody feels the way that Chris and I feel that about COVID. And so you have some of those that are truly scared and might be compromised.
And rightfully so.
And rightfully so, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're obese, have heart conditions.
Right.
Yeah.
There is factors.
100%.
And so those people now can go out on there and enjoy the internet and do those things. And so we tied it to that. And I actually enjoyed the way the county did it, the current supervisors, on how they placed that ARPA money. So you had some of it go to the jail, obviously law enforcement side, fire safe councils. I really enjoyed the way that they allocated the money because it does enhance our quality of life by doing it the way they did it.
Absolutely. And that's one thing about the ARPA, which isn't the LLMF funding in schools, but lost learning mitigation funding. So lost learning mitigation, you're talking about bringing experiences back to kids. Well, an air conditioner or laptops isn't bringing experiences back. So that's one thing about the ARPA money is I do like what Anderson did, and I do like, you know, some of the things you guys have mentioned about how it just sews right back in. And I agree, Chris, with what you said about, you know, tie it some way.
Yeah.
Be creative. And they're not auditing it like, you know, they originally said they would. So anyway.
But I think everybody did a good job with tying it to it,
yeah.
Which is going to get it, you know, keep us out of hot water. So
yeah. I think the most important,
it all works out.
I think the most important thing is just people like letting the general public know.
Right.
Just bring us into the conversation.
Yep.
Just don't do it behind closed doors and says, trust us, we got your back, we know what we're doing.
And I think County Council did a great job of explaining it. I mean, Chris just talked about it in detail, and I think the County Council did a great job of, if we can tie it to these things, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and we did a great job of that.
I agree. We'll start with you with this one, Barron. As a county, how can we support local business and develop economic growth?
Oh, that's a great question.
Well, that's why I asked it.
Thank you. Well, I'll just start with when I was running for Anderson and watched the fact that we were, you know, for many years since the mills closed, really not doing anything. And my whole business career has been about business development. And so when Anderson decided to break away from the EDC and go on our own, because my opinion is this, no one's going to look out for Barron but Barron. And so I feel that way as a county council person and as a supervisor. We are the ones that are elected to look out for our county, and nobody's going to do it unless we do it. And so we ended up starting our own ACE, Anderson Community Economic Development. So that has now been going 3 years, and we are on our 10th new business. And I'm not talking about the mom and pop. I'm talking about established businesses. NorCal Tractor just opened last week. You got Quick Quack Car Wash coming in the coming weeks. I tell everybody, we became a city just recently. We have a full-service car wash.
Yeah.
You've made it.
That's
and
right.
So I truly believe that the county and us as supervisors, that we head in that direction of forming our own economic development for the county.
So I think a lot of the problems with the county and in industry is this permitting process, and as well as the regulations and the bureaucrats making it difficult on people to open businesses. I have talked to so many people, horror story after horror story of personal property and permits and whatnot. But also there's businesses. I have a friend of mine in Cottonwood, started making moonshine as a hobby, you know, got really good at it. He's kind of a developer, and so he bought an old building in Front Street. went through the entire process of being able to distill spirits, which, you know, I said, how stringent was that? And he says, well, the FBI fingerprinted my 3-year-old daughter, if that tells you anything. So, wow. So he jumped through all those hoops and bought a building, and he wanted to move a wall or something. And it was like, nope, county shut the whole project down. So here's a guy that wants to manufacture something, an actual manufacturing job, not a retail job, but a manufacturing job, and the project shut down. Several years back, Sierra Pacific wanted to increase their cogeneration plant. So here they want to increase the cogeneration plant. This is taking fuels off the forest floors, burning it for energy, reducing the grid, reducing the stress on the grid, creating all their own power for the mill. And it was shut down.
More jobs.
For a county permit. Yeah, they're going to spend millions and millions of dollars in our local economy to do this project, and it was shut down by the county for a permit. I mean, that stuff has got to stop. It's just you're running businesses away by making it so difficult for somebody to do business, and, you know, we need to be in the mindset of, how can I help you? You're here for me to help you. Let me help you. You're a customer. I want to help you. You're also a tax-paying citizen, and we are tax-funded, so you're kind of my boss. So how can I help you, my boss? You know, that's the mindset we need to get in. And if there's ridiculous regulations or red tape that can be put aside and done with, then we need to get rid of it. I was told, or I heard Paul Hillman say on the supervisor's floor, that we don't have any regulations in Shasta County other than what the state requires. It's all state code, and we don't have any more regulations. And I was like kind of taken aback by that, because I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, how am I going to fix something if everything's state regulations and we're not doing anything above and beyond? Well, I have since learned that that is not correct. Maybe he misspoke. I don't know, but it's not correct. So I talked to a friend of mine that lives on the other side of the creek in Tehama County, and he built an entire barn on his place, whole barn. I mean, floor, walls, the whole bit, and no permits required, nothing. If he runs electricity to it, he has to get that inspected, but otherwise there is no inspections, there is no permits, there is anything. And I'm thinking, last I checked, Tehama County is still in California. I don't think you can build a barn in Shasta County without a permit or inspections or anything else.
I'm not sure you can build a Lincoln log structure.
Yeah, exactly. Legos probably don't put more than 5 of them together.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right, so are we with Baron now? Or with Baron or Chris?
Who's I think it's me.
Okay, just making sure. All right, so now we're going to get into the two questions that were the most asked repeatedly. And I tried to form it where it was basically worded how some of our listeners have asked. So question 5, do you believe our county is suffering from a water crisis? And if so, why?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting over. I mean, we've had water issues for a number of years now with Jones Valley and Bella Vista have huge water issues. They've had them for a decade. Now we've got problems out in Happy Valley. For the last 2 years, they've had a huge problem with Happy Valley, not enough water. They haven't to buy water on the market. You know, a manager ran off, and the only guy that can ask questions is gone with his secretary. And I mean, it's a big mess out there. And then, lo and behold, the ACID canal for the first time in 100-plus years has no water in it. So, yeah, we have huge problems. The ACID canal it's an environmental nightmare. I mean, absolute environmental nightmare. My property line is the ACID canal. I'm uphill from it, so I'm not a user. I'm just, you know, I'm not a water user from the canal, but I live up in the oak trees above it, and usually I don't worry too much about fire because I'm surrounded by green pastures down below me. Not so much this year. I mean, it's actually an environmental nightmare. There's turtles and, you know, bullfrogs and, I mean, just snakes and fish and the shorebirds, and I mean, it's a disaster down there. So we can't let that happen again. There was really not a whole lot we could do about letting it happen this time. From what I understand, I mean, it is what it is. Environmental groups sued the Trump administration. By the time it worked through the courts, it got to an activist lawyer. Biden had taken over by then. Activist lawyer said no water for anybody in the entire Sacramento Valley or northern Sacramento Valley. The BOR negotiated down to 18%, which wouldn't do us any good. If you have a cement ditch, 18% will get to a couple farmers. But in an earthen ditch, it would have gotten down to about Crown Motors. So it's a disaster. We have to make sure that we never let it happen again. In 2014, we actually wanted to fix parts of the canal, put some bentonite in there, some cement in places, you know, fix some of the leaks, because we lose 40% of our water from the time it goes in to the time it comes out in the river. Without irrigating, we lose 40% just in ground. So, but the California Fish and Game shut them down, said, no, you can't do that. This thing's been leaking for 100 years. This is now habitat, and you can't destroy this habitat, which now all the habitat's destroyed. So it's an environmental nightmare. I'm not sure what the solution is other than possibly, you know, taking it back over with we the people. We are the most powerful group.
Got it. Awesome, Baron.
It's absolutely an environmental disaster. And nowhere else would you go and not do an EIR. If we did that, we would be out of business.
Mm.
They would shut, the state and federal government would absolutely shut us down. And so I actually think there is a solution, and maybe not this year, but I think for years to come. And that is that we all, the cities and the county, get together. And if the other counties that are adjacent to us or have the same issue want to join in, fine. But we need to sue the state over BOR over the EIR. You have to do an EIR. The impact study alone would have said there's no way you can shut off this water. Let's be clear. That canal feeds a lot of wells.
Mm-hmm.
And it's left on every year because it feeds those wells.
How many?
It's part of that. I don't even know the number. Yeah. But even they said when they were going to tail it back before or fix it, that a lot of those wells get supplemented from that leakage. And so therefore you can't.
Yeah.
And so why are they letting it, why are they doing it to us now without an EIR and the impact study, not only to the environment, but to us, the people? That's huge. We have wells going dry everywhere, all across, from Cottonwood to Anderson, you know, all across the area.
Yeah.
Wells are going dry over and over again. You can see it every day. People are posting on the ACID site
yeah.
saying my well's dry. Where else could you do this? If us as a county did that, if we cut off the water, we would be sued.
Yeah.
And we'd have to stop. They would take us to court and then put an injunction on us.
Yeah.
And I think the same rules apply. We need to do the same thing. And we got to do this together. We got to join together, whether that's private groups and the public, you know, meaning the cities and the county and others that want to get involved with us. I think we have to do it. We have to try.
Yeah.
Look at all the trees that are dying. Look at all the animals. I mean,
that have been here for hundreds of
years.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's actually, I just found out, like, Anderson High School is playing their games at the middle school because the air conditioning at Anderson High School's large.
The swamp coolers came off of the canal. Yes.
Yeah. And yeah.
And that was done forever ago.
Yeah.
And what is the impact of that on our own kids? Right?
Exactly. Like, if I'm a senior, I'd like to play. And I know it's inconsequential when you're talking about people losing water in their wells and, you know, taking care of their pasture lands and everything else, or having fire mitigation issues now. But, you know, boiling it down, like, here's a high school kid that just wants to play on their home court against West Valley, and they can't do that. And it's like, you know, kids just keep getting screwed over, and I'm just tired of it.
So anyway. The Peter Fire is a great example of what happens when you don't have water.
Yeah. No,
right?
Absolutely.
It started up there. It probably would have burned up a couple of those homes, but it would have got to the canyon in the area that's normally all green.
Yeah.
And the fire would have
set. All right, so we're gonna jump into question six. We're going to start with you, Baron. How do we work as a county?
He's trying to keep it at 30 minutes. No matter
yeah,
what.
That's right. You know, I got the producer yelling at me and waving at me. No, Liam does a great job. Thank you, Liam. So how do we work as a county to prevent wildfire? And are you happy with the county's work on wildfire prevention / mitigation?
I think there's more to be done. I think as a county, we definitely need to do some of our own. If you go up Dersh and you go through that area, it's overgrown on both sides. That's absolutely dangerous. You want a prime example of a great system, and you go up to Shingletown. That Fire Safe Council is doing a fabulous job of cutting back from the roads, mitigating the fire danger as we drive out, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what's really important. Look at Paradise alone. When you look at those things, I think the county absolutely needs to step up, whether they go after some of those funds themselves. There's billions of dollars out there right now for fire safe councils and for counties and cities that have fire issues. And so we need to go after that money. We need to prop up our own now Shasta County Fire Safe Council, if they're the ones that are going to do all the way up Dersh and other roads. There's Happy Valley area that has, you know, those same type of issues that need to be taken care of. But we've really got to go after that funding. And if that means that we need to give them more money to do that, I absolutely would agree 100% to do that. And I think I think the Shasta County Fire Safe Council, when they said they didn't want more money, when they actually, I think they offered them almost another $1 million, they should have taken it.
Yeah.
In my opinion. So
yeah, the Shingletown has a good fire safe council, and they do a lot of work up there. Happy Valley is now starting one. They're in the baby steps of starting one. In fact, the first meeting was I had to go around Gas Point to get there because the Peter Pan fire was in full swing, and then when I got there, the power was out because there was no power during the Peter Pan fire. So that was our first fire safe council meeting out in Happy Valley. Yeah, there is millions and millions of dollars out there for fire safe councils and private property owners and different things. What I want to do is I want to force the feds and the state to take care of their lands. So I want to write a county ordinance. I talked to an ex-forester, a retired forester over in Trinity County, and they actually did this in Trinity County, and he said it worked. But if you write a county ordinance that we want so many metric tons per acre, off the forest floor or just the thick brush, whatever it is, so many metric tons per acre, we want you to curtail your plan to get into that. And my understanding is they will do that. They will try to fit into your county plan. So I want them to pay for their lands. And the reason that I pick, the federal government lands is I used to do a lot of hunting up above Shasta Lake, and it was checkerboarded in there. Every other square mile was National Forest or it was Sierra Pacific private property. And you couldn't camp on Sierra Pacific. And I can't tell you how many countless hours and hours and weeks we spent trying to find one little section that we could put a camp up on National Forest land. And if you didn't really need a map. If you were in a section that was so dense and the brush up to the road and no place to pull a truck over and you couldn't see, the sun didn't reach the forest floor and the forest floor was just, littered with dead brush and small trees, you were in National Forest.
Yep.
Well, they need to clean that up because when that burns, it burns everybody else too. So they need to clean their own forests up. The state forest up by Shingletown, we have Latour State Forest up there. They actually do a pretty good job. Lassen National Park does a pretty good job. Wilderness areas, the Thousand Lakes Wilderness area used to be a nightmare in there too. So I think it's all burned now, or a lot of it burned. So we need to get them to clean up their lands, and then that way we can use that money for our private lands, for private property owners. I don't want to make little old Widow Johnson go out there with a chainsaw and clear a property because some county code enforcement guy is saying, hey, you have more metric tons on here than you need to. But I want to encourage her, and I want to offer her help, and I want to say, hey, the county will help you, get the funding to do this. So
someday there's going to be a Widow Johnson that's going to come and say, you've been talking about me for
years. And she'll have a chainsaw.
She'll have a chainsaw.
Well, it's funny. I just talked to a supervisor this past week when I was on the Six Rivers Lightning Complex, and he said they're actually going after some of those funds for our elderly and disabled that make under a certain income.
Yeah.
And so they can, not give them the money, but hire people to do defensible space.
In lieu of.
On private property.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Okay, let's take a quick 1 minute, 1.5 minute break. When we come back, we're going to take our first call, and I see people are already calling in. 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. We'll be right back.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When it comes to buying and selling real estate, one size does not fit all. Higher-priced homes sell differently than medium-priced homes. Make sure your realtor knows the difference and has the right tools to get your home sold for the highest price. Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor how they plan to sell your home and what they'll do differently to make your listing stand out. Ask your realtor what kind of experience they have in marketing and sales outside the real estate industry. Be sure to choose a realtor with solid marketing and sales training who also understands tech and internet advertising. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure to call the number one high-end home selling agent for the past 13 years, me.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
Hi, this is Amber from Ninja Coalition HQ, Reading's premier ninja gym. Based off the popular TV show American Ninja Warrior, we offer group and private ninja training classes, including parkour, open gym sessions, private birthday parties, field trips, and our very popular ninja night out. We are located outside the Mount Shasta Mall. Stop by and sign up for a class or book your next party. Mention this ad and receive $25 off your party or $20 off your first month's membership. Check us out on Instagram or visit our website, ninjacoalition.com. We look forward to seeing you at Ninja Coalition HQ, Reading's premier ninja gym.
All right, and we're back. KCNR 605-4567. Go ahead and call in and ask your questions. One thing I'm going to say is we have two very, very distinguished gentlemen here, and I want to keep this very civil. So if you do call in, you're going to ask your question, then Liam's going to cut it. There won't be any follow-ups. But if you have it directed particularly to one candidate, we're going to give both candidates a chance to respond to the question if they choose to. So let's go to our callers. Who do we have first, Liam?
We have Rich.
Okay, Rich, are you there?
Yeah, hi, guys.
Hello, Rich.
Hey, I just want to say I do have a short diatribe, and then I do have a question. So I just finished my play to Crow. I didn't think Barron would show up, but good for you, sir, for showing up. You have more fortitude than most other local politicians, so good for you for showing up.
Thanks.
So you know what? So here's the deal. If everybody left, before they left their house in the morning, if they read the Ten Commandments posted on their wall before they left, we would have a much polite and kinder and civil society. If all politicians, before they left their house in the morning, if they read the original U.S. Constitution, if they read the original California Constitution, which in itself is a very, very good document, minus the 500 amendments.
Do you have a question, Rich?
I do have a question.
Okay.
I do have a question. I had to set the groundwork.
Okay.
So the question is, local control, regardless of what the state says, regardless of what the federal government says, regardless of them holding money over our heads, what are these candidates willing to do to assert local control, regardless of any political or financial ramifications? And I will hang up. Thank you so
much. That's a great question. Chris, start with you.
Well, you know, there's a thing called interposition. So you can stand between your citizens and the federal government or the state government. Usually it's used with a constitutional sheriff, but board of supervisors could also stand between their citizens. But I think Sheriff Johnson, you know, if we get him on board and knows that we have his back. A few years back, there was a sheriff down in El Dorado County, and federal government wanted to shut down all the roads and wasn't going to let anybody drive them, and he stepped in their position. He stepped in between and said, you will not shut down those roads. Those are our roads. They're in my county, and you have no jurisdiction here, and if you give anybody a ticket, I will arrest you. And they backed off and, you know, did it away. So you can stand up to them, you know, but usually our hand is out, and that's where so many people don't want to stand up to them because they're afraid of losing that funding. So
yeah.
My big thing is most of that funding originates here, so, you know, we could have the same threat. Okay, you're not going to give us our own funding back? Well, then maybe we won't send it to you to begin with, so, you know.
Yeah, okay. Barron, same question. Local control, what does it mean?
Great question. First of all, in Anderson, on the city council, we have butted back against some of these things that he's brought forward that takes away our local control. And as a supervisor, I will continue to do the same thing over and over and again, every time.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, the city of Reading, where I'm a resident.
Again, we were the first ones
to
stop.
City of Reading got rid of the state of emergency, and I quote, when the person interviewed, you can go back and watch it, said there was no more money to be had, so we ended it. And it was the same day the county ended it, so that's not leadership.
Right.
Good for you guys in Anderson. We have another caller. Holy cow, is that true, Liam? All right, caller, are you there?
Hi, it's Kylie. Sorry,
hey, Kylie. Hey, how? Anyway, how far are you guys made to the Grapevine yet?
Yeah, we're like 2 hours away.
Awesome.
Anyways, just one question. If you guys were to get elected as District 5 supervisor, what would you guys do to make housing more affordable, or what could you do if people like me could afford to live there after college?
Great question, Kylie. And you guys drive safe. All right, Barron, we'll start with you.
Sure. I really think, and Anderson's got a development going on right now where you've got a much smaller starter home that's much more reasonable. And as you've seen in Anderson, our fees are a lot lower. And so, you know, we absolutely have to look at resource management.
Yes.
And everything that's going on and what the true costs are, what they're really doing, you know, and the things that they're falling through with. So the city of Anderson is a great start because when you file for your permit, it's 30 to 45 days and you have it back.
Yeah.
Not 4 to 6 months.
That quick?
So we've really got to work. And if that means we need to hire outside services to do that, then that's exactly what we need to do. Because when businesses and houses aren't being built, there's no income coming into the county and the cities. The
economy comes to screeching.
Right. And so we've really got to go down that path of making sure that, you know, we're following suit. I think, you know, Chris mentioned it, but Tehama does a great job with the same aspect. And that's really where the city of Anderson, you know, really looked at and said, look what they're doing and look at how fast their processes are. And why can't we do the same?
And I know people that have moved to Tehama County from Shasta.
And I think there's other ways to look at it. When you're held up, I think our staff does a great job of looking outside the box. Hey, you really can't do this, but if you did this, you're there. Right?
Yep.
We're going to help guide you because we need you there.
Absolutely.
As a community, we need you to open your business or build your house or whatever you've got going on. We need to help you get there. And I think we do a great job of that. And as your next supervisor, that will be the same.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the permit process is a big deal there. I mean, it's in 2000, 2001, we were looking for land to build a house on, and it was already about $10,000 more in Shasta County than it was in Tehama County. You know, I didn't really care what side of the creek I lived on. And then Shasta County had just raised their permit fees again, so it was going to be like $15,000 less to live in Tehama County than Shasta County. So, you know, affordable housing is great, but when we keep raising the price of the permits, how do you get to affordable housing? I had breakfast in Cottonwood the other day, and there's an older lady there that was looking for a place, and, you know, she believed in rent control. You know, they need to control these rents. And, you know, I'm on a fixed income. They need to control these rents. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I feel for you, and that would be great, except they're not controlling the permit fees and the property taxes and the building costs for the person that's that apartment you want to live in or mobile home or whatever it is that you're looking for. They have to pay a full set of fees. So how can you tell them, you know, we want you to invest in our community. We want you to invest your dollars and build some buildings for housing. But oh, by the way, you're not going to make any profit on it.
You may lose money. Yeah,
right.
No way.
I mean, so we need to streamline the permit process. We need to look at lowering those costs. I mean, I'm all for affordable housing. Absolutely. But we need to cut the permit fees first. The same people that say we need more affordable housing want to jack up our permits for, you know, one project or another. So let's drop those permit fees down.
Well, let's be clear. Subsidized housing, it's not affordable.
No.
It's $300,000 a door for an apartment.
Yep.
That's not affordable. And so the state has come in and made all these regulations and done all this stuff so that we have these huge high costs that we as the taxpayers are paying on a regular basis, but it's absolutely not affordable. I think you got some great things coming out with Emergent 3D and their prospect of building affordable housing that are low cost, all cement. I look forward to seeing what they have to bring to the table. There's some others out there that are coming around looking to do the same thing. One of them potentially in Anderson that started last year. Hopefully they get finished and they can also do the same thing where they're actually building the modular facility right there in Anderson and then shipping it by truck. And so you're taking away, you know, about one third of the prevailing wage with if it's built on site. So hopefully we can get a lot of those costs down if we start looking outside the box and working with some of these companies that can do those things.
No, that's a great. So I had something from the message board come in. They don't want to call in and ask, but here's the question. We'll just say the person's first initial is B. And we'll ask Chris, you first. What would you do differently to prevent crime and homelessness in Shasta County?
Well, the jail is the big one. I mean, and we have, you know, we just closed the third floor of our jail. So we just released another 80, 90 people out onto the streets. We lost the contract to Lassen County. We had 22 inmates housed over there. Those guys are back on the street. So a jail is a huge issue. Now, if we build a bigger jail today, if we can't house the jail, you know, we can't man the jail that we have now, then what good is another jail going to do? So first thing we need to do is help Sheriff Johnson get his house in order right now and get that thing staffed. I mean, whatever we need to do, we need to help out and get that thing staffed. once we get it staffed, then we need to look at. Personally, I kind of like the plan of the modular jail where the temporary courthouse is right now, right next to the current jail. That's where I would like to see the new jail go. And it's modular, so I think the first plan is 290-some beds, but you can keep going up in stories as you need to. But first thing we need to do is get our jail staffed right now before we even start talking about working on another one. So
yeah. I agree with part of it. I will say that we absolutely have to support our sheriff in understanding how we can recruit more COs into our facility. But I will say that I absolutely believe that we need a new jail, and for a couple different reasons. One, it uses about 20% to 30% less personnel to run the new facility with the modern way that it works today. Our old jail is not conducive to our environment. It creates, 30% more staff needs. We're all the time getting sued over ADA issues in that current jail, where this wipes all of that out. And you're still looking, even with CEQA and everything else, you're still looking at a 2 to 4 year process for that one modular building, wherein, you add another couple more years to it and you have a brand new jail built.
So you've heard as low as 2 to 4 years?
Modular jail.
For the modular. Yeah. That's a CEQA.
Yeah, but is the 2 year you think even feasible? Like, you think they hit that 2 year?
Well, so here's my problem. So you've got roughly what they talked about it a little bit. They've hit around $50 or $60 million in the bank. When you use that up on the modular, then you have nothing for the new jail, which is really, in my opinion, what we need, just from an economical standpoint and from a workforce workload standpoint. Because you work a lot, the staff will be working a lot less because they're in a controlled room environment where they can see all of the personnel, all the inmates at one time, where now you're having to walk up and down rows and aisles and corners and blind spots, to look at all of your inmates. I think the new system is a much better way, of a controlled environment. It's much safer for our correctional officers, and it reduces our costs from personnel.
But I think you could do all that in the modular jail, personally, on myself. I mean, I know I've heard a single-story jail is much easier, but with cameras and electronic door locks and everything else we have today, I don't think a modular jail that was 2 or 3 stories high would be that much more difficult. Now, granted, the old jail was built back in the 80s, and I mean,
it was outdated when it was finished.
It kind of was, yeah. So, I mean, but, I know somebody that was, worked for Tehama County in the juvenile hall, and there was a control room. I mean, you could see every room in there from sitting in a chair watching TV. You could see everything that's going on, and you could zoom in on one, and and then you did have to have the people on the floor, but it was like, hey, go check out what's going on, this pod or that pod, and go talk to so and so. But I mean, you could basically watch pretty much the entire inmates from up there from one chair. So
I struggle with the cost of $150 million when you only need roughly $500 million for a new jail that's
sometimes it feels like throwing good money after bad.
Right.
And for me, one of the things, I know this isn't my time, but the one thing I will say, either next week or the week after, I'm going to have some recruitment individuals in the law enforcement community, not just from here, but other places as well. And I said, dude, like, we got to figure out the retention and the recruiting of the jail personnel. Like, that's the bigger issue to me than just the brick and mortar building. We have construction guys that can put it up. We have the land, the space, the money, the funding. But we don't have the people. And how are we going to get and keep the people? Right. But that's another question. So
What's really important to understand, though, is we can't be looking for tomorrow.
Well, we look for 10 years, 20 years down the road.
We're looking for 50, 70 years from now.
It's like the water.
Right? Because when you build the new jail, you can add on to it with the amount of land that they're going to, that they're looking at having. You can add on for our future at a much lower cost. And at some point in the current area, we're going to be restricted on where we can place all of
those. But if it gets much worse, if it gets much worse, what's Reading and Chester going to be in 10 years?
That's what I was just going to say. I mean, yeah, Barron's right. We have a long-range plan, but the question was, how are we stop crime now? And stopping crime now is not to say, well, we're going to have a solution 10 years down the road. We need a solution right now.
Right now.
I mean, and first of all, we need to get that staffing done in the current jail immediately, because we need to get those other 100 people back in there.
Yep.
You know, we need to work on another contract with Lassen County County, Siskiyou County, Tama County, whoever we can, and get, if we can't house them ourselves, get that contract back in effect and get some more people out of there until we can get something done. So that's, we need some people off the streets today.
Do either of you know when the WellPath contract is up to be renewed?
I get a phone call about that just about every day.
Yeah, I've been.
But we're talking about, you know, those people. We didn't even hit on that. We hit just on the jail, but we didn't even talk about the homeless. But, you know, over the last couple of weeks, I've inquired about a couple of things, and I really think that, you know, from a health and human services standpoint, we really need to be looking at a mental health facility. And how we do that, I'm sure there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, but we have a hospital that just closed in the last few months, Patients Hospital.
Yeah.
And the county should be really looking at Patients Hospital going, hey, can we make that, you know, a mental health facility and get those people? Because the thing is that, you know, you might be able to capture 20% of the homeless, but 80% are never going to go there, and they probably don't even have the mind to do it.
Yeah.
Right? We need to get them into a facility, you know, get them off whatever they're on, if they're on anything first, right? And then start getting them the medication so that they can understand at some point, hopefully come back to reality. But we're not going to do that on the street. We all know that. We look at it every day.
And I personally think jail beds help facilitate that, because if you get somebody, you know, on a 30-day hold for whatever the case may be, you know, get the drugs out of their system, and then you're able to offer them help at that point when they have a little bit more of a clear mind. And right now with a revolving door, you know, they, whatever, steal a car, break into a house, do whatever, they're let back out, they're just looking for their next fix. And there's no, they're not going to accept help in that mindset. So I think, again, jail beds solve a lot of problems.
And I agree, and I think that's why Sheriff Johnson's plan of the new facility with all of those services incorporated, where you're keeping them on campus, they're still arrested, they're still in either a drug rehab or in a mental facility on campus, is great. But we've got to look outside of that, because in some cases we can stop them from even going to jail by having a mental health facility right here. And that area where that one's at is not even near any other houses or businesses or anything. It's actually a very good location for that.
I mean, when someone's drowning, they would love to be in a luxury cruise liner or a nice boat, but you know what? They'll take a board, a plank,
right?
Something, and that's where I feel like right now, something needs to be done now, because it we can't let it go. So there's an immediate need with a long term thought. So we're gonna go to a caller. We probably have a time for a couple more. 530-605-4567. We have a caller, Lori. Thank you so much for being patient.
Real good. Hey, I have a question that's probably going to integrate what you were just talking about onto the next topic, and I'll listen off air for my response. We have the illegal grows of marijuana, the cartels ruining and destroying everything. Most people that I know agree this is absolutely unacceptable, and we're fed up and done. Here's the question. When we have Joe Dokes and Kathy Grindstaff at the Board of Supervisors week after week after week, giving us updates, and they've got their videos, they've got their documentaries. How is this any different from the current public health that we have, HHS, public health, and we already had Karen Ramstrom finally get terminated? And where are we with the interim officer, who's Dr. Michael Vavakis? I'm hearing crickets. Nothing is being out there after about 2 years of our invested efforts, and I want to ask both candidates, where are they with what has been happening, and what, and we've got the alternative schools and whatnot, is where are they with the cartel crushing us and our own public health crushing us at the same time?
So what we'll do is we'll tackle the question of the illegal grows, and then, Chris, I think it's your turn.
Thank you, because, yeah, public health, I'm not happy at all.
Chris.
Yeah, so they just refunded the put back into effect the marijuana eradication team. So, and Johnson's still staffing that. He's still, I mean, they're still, you know, they have done several raids. They've, you know, done several gardens. He's still bringing everybody in, and there's been some promotions recently and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, I just got a call today from somebody up in Shingletown, and they witnessed a guy going down with a water truck and sucking up water right out of Cow Creek, you know, and I mean, here we are, we have no water down here in ACID, and I just about guarantee you that was for a marijuana grow somewhere.
Well, it wasn't for strawberries.
It probably wasn't, yeah.
Well, I wonder what the fine is. Well, Baron, go ahead and answer.
Sure. You know, I think Chris and I and the public at large agree on this wholeheartedly, and I think Sheriff Johnson has done a great job of stepping right in right off the bat saying, yes, we're going to have this marijuana eradication team. They've done dozens of raids. They just did a few, two last week. As a matter of fact, or sorry, week before last. And so they're very effective. But we also have to get, again, this goes back to resource management. We also, I believe this is two parts of resource management. I think, you know, resource management, needs that code enforcement person on that side. But I also think, from the same aspect, we need code enforcement on the law enforcement side that actually enacts those things, same things. It's able to go out and cut these people off anytime, you know, especially if we're having people draw out of water. That's insanity.
It is.
We have no water. Our cattle can't graze, but this guy can have all the marijuana water he wants. But we need, that's two parts to, that team. And I think it needs to happen.
And I think one of my commercials, you know, basically said that my aggravation is when the county's using a county drone and county time and personnel to fly over a homeowner's house and tell them that their garden shed's too big or their patio doesn't have a permit or whatever. It's like, you know, how about we take that drone and go fly it up in the hills and look for some marijuana grows and take the same code enforcement guy that's going to go after the homeowner for not having a permit on their patio. Let's get him, obviously, with some sheriff's help, but let's go. I mean, there's all sorts of violations being done in these grows. There's pesticides. They're killing animals. They're grading. You know, they're destroying the habitat. They're doing all, you know, waterways are being polluted. They're doing all sorts of horrible things. Much worse, in my opinion, than a patio that doesn't have a permit.
Yeah, well, so. Yeah.
I think that's the great thing about Sheriff Johnson's plan of bringing all these other agencies, state and federal government agencies, to really tackle those things. But that's only a small piece of it. I mean, we have a great satellite system. We don't need a drone. The satellite system alone, you can look right over Google Earth and pinpoint where the marijuana grows are from yesterday.
Yeah.
And so the county, you know, code enforcement guy that's actually working for the sheriff's department can look right at and go, hey, look at this one. That's a huge one. Let's go get that one.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's where we need to change
our focus. And I think we're
focus.
Saying the same thing. Yeah. So we totally agree on this.
Yeah, I think the, yeah, I mean, that's disturbing, though, thinking that there's a water truck.
Yeah.
And someone, I mean, you know, that's hard watching somebody have to, you know.
Well, I saw a good one on, I think it was Facebook, and it doesn't matter what site. But somebody said, well, there's a purple, there's a purple fire hydrant in Anderson. You can just go get it and get free water. Just to be clear, there's no purple fire hydrant where you can go get free water because I don't disagree with the farmer that needs that for their land or their cattle and their livestock and all of that. The problem is that you wouldn't be getting it. Those guys would figure it out and come and get it.
Yeah, and nothing's free.
Right.
Nothing's free. We all know.
Right. We have to account for every drop.
Absolutely. And I think that, it's one of the most contentious issues I know for me with the safety. So we have about 3 minutes left. Baron, could you give us a 60-second bite of why District 5, you should be able to earn their vote?
Sure. I have a proven track record of always doing the right thing, always thinking about our county and our community first. I have a proven track record of always being honest. And that goes back to the half-cent sales tax. Here's what we're going to do with it. We've always done it. And so I have a proven track record of doing that. I have a proven track record of solving problems, life problems. When it came to a bunch of different issues, including flavored vaping, we tackled that. We were one of the first ones to tackle it. Shasta County approved it, and now it's federally banned. I did see a store selling it the other day, so I will be contacting somebody about that. But and then you have the butane that we tackled when we had all those explosions. I'm not afraid to take on the big problems. I'm not afraid to do my research and understand what federal and state laws, especially when it comes down to on that particular one, which was fascinating to me because it dealt with e-commerce as well. And so you're dealing with a lot of different issues when it came to butane and what the laws could be and are. And actually, most cities and counties in the state of California passed that same ordinance. So, yep, I've approved
awesome.
The contract.
So, Chris,
thank you.
Yeah, no.
So it's funny Baron mentions the flavored vapes because that's actually one of the few places that we may have disagreed on. I know he told me his plan at a swim meet, actually. But that is one of the rare occasions that we really didn't agree. And I think there, it does show a difference. When you told me about that, I thought, you know, I personally, I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't vape. I don't know anybody that does vape. I don't care about vapes. I couldn't care less about what flavor vapes you guys use. I don't care. But to me, I looked at that, and the reason I disagreed with it is it's another way of government telling you what you can and can't do. You know, we have places in New York where you can only get a certain size soda, or you no salt shakers on the table because they don't want you to put salt on your fries. And I mean, I get really tired of the government telling me how to live my life, what flavored vape I can have, whether I can have a large soda, what, I have to wear a seatbelt to go to the local grocery store. Now, I recommend everybody wear a seatbelt, but I don't think the government needs to make a law. So I think that's actually one of the differences. And I mean, and Baron and I are friends, so I'm not slamming him, but I'm more of a, I don't believe in government is your answer. I'm more government is your problem. And I want to do this thing one term, two terms, whatever. That's it. I'm out. I'm not going to make it a career out of this thing. In fact, to prove my sincerity, I will turn down the retirement day number one. So government is your problem, in my opinion.
Well, listen, guys, you guys are two class acts. Consider you both friends now. I appreciate you coming on. I hope to possibly do this with my opponent. We'll see if she'll maybe take that invitation. But you guys are awesome. Thank you for your time. And I'll tell you this, District 5, Anderson, Cottonwood, and the whole community is going to be lucky to have either one of you. So thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks.
KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
Center.